We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
And now New Galaxy Broadcasting presents Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition, a program addressing the grave challenges to human and citizen rights in America and the rest of the world. How can we, the people of Earth, take back the power and privileges granted to us by God and address so significantly in the Declaration of Independence? Our rights are inalienable, that is, given by God and incapable of being taken away from or given by another. These rights are the basis of liberty, the foundation of all life and happiness. The Coalition of Planetary Empowerment is an organization designed to give its members tools and information to empower them personally, in relationships and in business and employment, but also to give them a voice and the ability to help transform political and corporate governance to support the true needs and desires of people throughout the world. Inalienable and Free focuses on the need for government and corporate business interests to be responsive to the will and desire of their constituents and consumer shareholders. My name is Johnny Bluestar, host of Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. I'm broadcasting here live in American Fork, Utah, which is a wonderful place to live. Another thing that I'm doing is I'm broadcasting under the auspices of BBS Radio. And I used to be an AM talk radio host. I had many programs, and I had a live audio engineer or board op working with me. And I've been through a lot since the internet started, and I've wound up in a station which is, I don't know, it replicates all the good things about live radio broadcast from a radio studio, but it also has a sort of friendly aura. I don't know how to explain it. It's like you're on a mission here because of the nature of the other hosts that are involved and the owners of this station. So if you want to be a talk radio show host, I suggest you look at BBS Radio. Anyway, this particular program, Inalienable and Free, is part of an effort to create an organization, as mentioned before, called the Coalition of Planetary Empowerment, which in part seeks a spiritual basis for political action. The core nature of the spirituality I'm speaking of is based on the foundational assumption of the Declaration. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and are endowed with certain inalienable rights, and among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I've talked about this a lot. There's so much in these few words. Of course, we have to ask ourselves, did Jefferson and the Founding Fathers live up to this, to these words in the founding of the American government? No, in a world of state slavery, white and male supremacy, with suffrage severely restricted, often to white property owners, we could hardly say that. But yet our Constitution moved towards that goal, at least for Americans, in our view. The idea that all men are equal is at the core of every true spiritual teaching, whatever it is called, and however priestly or political hands have tried to obscure it. These thoughts, the thoughts of equality among men, bring us directly to the subject of our show today, Moving to Jerusalem, the Dark Bloody Shadows of Peace. In our program, we apply the concept of equality of all men and women, of course, to every world political situation. In this case, we expose why the move to Jerusalem and its choreographed signals before and after the official move are not based on a desire for peace, but rather a collaborative effort to destroy and destabilize key components of the Middle East to advance a cynical, imperialistic agenda. Very strong words, I know that. We hold governments and private political and corporate agendas responsible for this, not peace-loving Jewish or Muslim people who only want peace and safety for themselves and for the rest of the world. This program is dedicated to those peace-loving people, to those who might hear this and who need a wake-up call or might need to deepen their knowledge of the harsh reality this world presents, because it's us only, we the people, that can do anything about this. Let's look at what happened when the embassy opened in N27.
On behalf of the 45th President of the United States of America, we welcome you officially and for the first time to the Embassy of the United States here in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Thank you.
Today we follow through on this recognition and open our embassy in the historic and sacred land of Jerusalem. And we're opening it many, many years ahead of schedule.
By moving our embassy to Jerusalem, we have shown the world once again that the United States can be trusted. We stand with our friends and our allies, and above all else, we've shown that the United States of America will do what's right, and so we have.
Thank you, President Trump, for having the courage to keep your promises. And the truth is that Jerusalem has been and will always be the capital of the Jewish people, the capital of the Jewish state.
If anyone's actually seen this, this is a very impressive ceremony indeed. But it's a very strange time to have it. And when you really look at it carefully, you see some other strange things. Like, here's a little clip about the Dallas pastor, Robert Jeffress, who gave a dedication prayer at the opening.
As Dallas pastor Robert Jeffress gave a prayer at the embassy opening, he has been a staunch President Trump supporter, and this moment was no different. Our Jason Wheeler is in studio with a lot more on this tonight. Jason?
Yeah, John and Izzy, and he certainly did praise the president there today when he appeared at that U.S. embassy opening. Pastor Jeffress was a controversial choice, to say the least. We'll get to more on that controversy here in just a moment. First, though, let's actually listen in to a little bit of that prayer.
We see how Israel has been that blessing to the entire world through her innovations in medicine, technology, and energy. But most of all, Israel has blessed this world by pointing us to you, the one true God, through the message of her prophets, the scriptures, and the Messiah. We come before you today thanking you for your providential and powerful protection of this nation from all who would seek to destroy her. This nation, the nation of Israel, you have called the apple of your eye.
Okay, so that was some of the actual prayer today. You may have seen this on your social media feeds last night, though. Former Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney saying, Robert Jeffress says, you can't be saved by being a Jew, and Mormonism is heresy from the pit of hell. He said the same about Islam. Such a religious bigot should not be giving the prayer that opens the United States Embassy in Jerusalem. Boy, that really stirred things up on Twitter last night. And then today we saw the pastor himself tweeting a response. It was his appearance this morning on Fox and Friends, rebutting what was said here by Mitt Romney. Let's take a listen to that.
These were comments ripped out of context from years ago. Secondly, you know, for historic Christianity for 2,000 years has taught that salvation is through faith in Christ alone. And the fact that I and tens of millions of evangelical Christians still believe that is not bigoted and it's not newsworthy.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I told you I was broadcasting from American Fork. American Fork is a largely Mormon community. I'm not a Mormon, but half my family is. And the other half, well, the other parts of my family are partly Christian and partly Jewish. So I have to take this person's insult against my friends who are Muslim, Christian, and Jewish is rather... Muslim, Mormon, and Jewish, as kind of upsetting. And I can tell you, living here in this community, these are the nicest people you'll ever meet. They're very friendly. They never are pushy with me in any way in terms of their religious beliefs. They know who I am, and they have just welcomed us here. And we've been here for, you know, 3 or 4 years. So given his statements, this pastor's statements from utilizing his anti-Mormon, anti-Jewish, anti-Muslim remarks, he would hardly be a fitting choice by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know if I mentioned it, but he is a Fox News contributor too. That's interesting. It's almost as if the official program structures as it was to highlight a certain type of Christian faith, coupled with the bad timing of the official opening that coincided with the Palestinian massacre, was an intentional self-destructive effort at those who would dare to pray for peace in the shadow of their own crimes against humanity. Well, that's how I feel about it. I feel it is a very, very serious thing to bring this man aboard, since I know that they knew it. Well, everyone was very congratulatory at this wonderful meeting of moving the embassy to Jerusalem. But while the speech was going on, as I've said, lethal force was being used on protesters, resulting in multiple deaths and hundreds of wounded. Let's hear more about these protests. N29.
Now to developments here in Israel. President Trump made good on his campaign promise to move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, now recognized by the U.S. as Israel's capital. In a recorded message played at the opening of the embassy, the only foreign embassy in Jerusalem, Mr. Trump said, "Our greatest hope is for peace." The reality today was violence, especially in Gaza. However, Palestinians who hope to make East Jerusalem their capital stage mass demonstrations, setting fires and throwing firebombs and stones across the border into Israel. Israeli soldiers shot and killed more than 50 Palestinians. More than 1,200 were hurt. We witnessed more protests in the West Bank city of Ramallah. We're going to have more on that in just a moment. But we begin with Holly Williams in Gaza on the deadliest day there since the cross-border war of 2014.
They were angry today in Gaza about the new U.S. embassy. Men and women threw rocks. And while many protesters were peaceful, some started fires along the border fence with Israel. They've been demonstrating here for 6 weeks now, 40,000 of them today, according to Israel, encouraged by Hamas, the militant group that's controlled the Gaza Strip since 2007. Israeli soldiers dropped tear gas canisters from drones. They'd already dropped leaflets warning Palestinians not to get too close to the fence. And when they did, the Israelis used live ammunition.
There are casualties coming back from the fence. Some of them have been shot, and it is utter chaos here.
Palestinians want to return to lands they fled in 1948 when the State of Israel was founded. And they are furious over what they say is American bias towards Israel. But with their slingshots and burning tires, the protesters, including six children who were reportedly killed today, seem to be losing their lives for nothing. But many Palestinians, like Hakam Abu Shanab, who wants to study for a master's degree, believe dancing with death is the only way to show their desperation.
You have a very bright future. Are you willing to die here?
Dying here is the only way, or expressing, or at least expressing our feeling to the world, show them that we are dying every day here.
These protests are also fueled by economics. Gaza's been blockaded for more than 10 years now. Nearly half of young people can't find jobs, while most families depend on humanitarian aid.
Holly, just incredible images from Gaza today. We should note that Turkey and South Africa have recalled their ambassadors from Israel. You've been reporting in Gaza for several days now. What is it like there tonight?
Jeff, there's a lot of grief here in Gaza. They'll be burying many of their dead tomorrow. But in general, here in the Gaza Strip, most people are just trying to get on with their lives, despite frequent power cuts and shortages of the goods that they need.
All right, Holly Williams for us. Holly, thank you.
Let me remind you, this is a talk show. Our number is 1-888-429-5471. Please keep your questions and comments connected to the theme of the show, which is about the extraordinary things happening here in Gaza. Again, the number is 888-429-5471. Now, here's a message about how we at New Galaxy Enterprises help our clients create original television pilots, followed by a clip of a very amusing and touching song by one of the most unusual and talented singer-songwriters I know, Stephanie Slevin. This is Johnny Bluestar, CEO of New Galaxy Enterprises, a media content development company. The original productions by Amazon, Hulu, and Netflix in particular has opened up a new and powerful form of television that has both global income and still unexplored profit potential as convergence between offline and online media continues to blossom. We can help persons needing creative help to turn their ideas for television pilots into actionable, marketable scripts. There's probably nothing more exciting in the field of entertainment than these new vistas online as that capacity crosses more and more to the big screen, and the opportunities for instantaneous online projections of any type of media in that perennially popular venue. To learn more about New Galaxy, see samples of our work, or talk to us about your project, please go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com and fill out the contact form. This song by Stephanie Slevin has got a lot of listeners throughout the world. It's called I Know You Love Me the Most, and it's a fun song.
I may have marmalade on my toast, and you may have your caviar. I may walk to work in my second-hand shoes, and you drive in your fancy car. I'm down here and you're up there, you're giving me the looks like you don't care. But they say love and hate are so very close, so I know that you love me the most. I know by the way you stare at me that deep down inside you care for me. You may drink champagne to my cup of tea, but nobody freaking cares. And you say I ain't the one for you, that I'm way down there beneath the view. But look at what your Porsche's done to you, and nobody freaking cares. She took your money and laughed at you, and then slept with all your mates and they were laughing too. So let's kick her to the curb, yeah, me and you, for nobody freaking cares. And I know you said bad things of me, but deep down inside you care for me. For they say love and hate are so very close, so I know that you love me the most. Took to your drink and your one night stand, so please don't judge me by your own bad hand. Yeah, stand up straight, just be the man, for nobody freaking cares. And come down off your mighty horse and take a chance on me, and we'll run the course, and we'll show the bitch we don't do divorce, for nobody freaking cares. And I know you said bad things of me, but deep down inside you care for me. For they say love and hate are so very close, so I know that you love me the most. Yes, I know that you love me the most.
That was Stephanie Slevin with a very catchy tune, and she has many dimensions in herself and in her music. Anyway, I understand that Andy Miller is on the line.
Hi, Johnny.
Hey, how are you doing?
I was listening to your show, and I think finding out more information about what's been happening in the Palestinian area and Israel is great. The problem is there's so much that we need to know. I started to look at the legal status of the territories, which is complex. And I started to look at the conflicts, which are thousands of years old, in an area where all the peoples have had trouble reconciling the religious to non-religious laws. For instance, even among the religious, here in the United States, we have a written constitution, but in Israel and Palestine, there is no written constitution. They have a set of laws that have developed over time, but the ages-old conflicts between whether the laws should be derived from religious writings or secular writings, even in Netanyahu's family, there's a debate. So when I step back, yes, it's horrible, but one of the reasons it's horrible is because no one has taken a long look at the people in power and why they do what they do. We focus on words like the rule of law, but even in our country, we're having a crisis where leaders believe they can make their own laws. So for instance, in Gaza and the West Bank, they were supposed to, but the UN said one thing, countries on the ground did another. And even when you look at what the UN says, is that truly international law? Some people say, depends on who's running the UN. So there's various perceptions that you can take. You and I have the luxury to to have time to be thoughtful. Many people in that area are just struggling for survival. And if they were led by leaders who took the time to be thoughtful, they would be much better off. But they're led by leaders who are reactive, transactional people, usually with self-serving motives, and they just want to make an instant response in a transactional fashion without any understanding of what justice and freedom mean.
Well, I think we increasingly are having some of those leaders here too, right?
We indeed, but we have one benefit they didn't. We have a concretized document. It's much harder when our leaders try and say, this is our law. We have a solid document and tradition so far that our judicial system and our media, for the most part, has upheld. Although one of the problems, for instance, this time around, the media in the Arab states has been fragmented now by their leaders and some of our leaders, too. So the Arab states no longer televise their perception of atrocities in Palestine, and therefore it doesn't garner world... You heard this, the clip you just played. Most Palestinians are just trying to go about their lives, and that young fellow said, we have to die because that's the only way to bring world attention to us. But if the media of the world isn't paying attention, then they're dying in vain.
Yeah, well, that's definitely part of their motivation in this having this giant protest. Well, thank you, Andy.
I just want to say one last thing. Let's be careful to share the blame equally, because although Israel may be at fault for these deaths, in a way, the conditions were set up in part by people ruling Palestine. And also, I understand it's difficult living in Tel Aviv and having rocket warnings every few hours or every day. I do understand that that creates an atmosphere that tends to be reactive.
Well, I definitely think that there is, in this issue, a lot of two-way problems. Of course, we're focusing on one of them, but we'll discuss a little bit about that, what you were talking about later on in the program. My pleasure. We just heard Prime Minister Netanyahu assert how Jerusalem was and always will be the capital of Israel. Let's hear him again right now before the opening of the embassy with a bit of pushback by political commentator Jake Morfonios, an articulate critic of many of Israel's disturbing actions. His claim requires research, but in the wake of all this pain that is going on in regards to this move, perhaps an alternative voice might be useful. Let's listen to him on N30.
I keep hearing people making this false claim that Jerusalem has been the capital of Israel for thousands of years. That's absolutely untrue. It's a very influential lie that has been perpetuated because not enough people take the time to question the claim and go back and put the facts together. Jerusalem has not been the capital of Israel for 3,000 years. Did you know that if you add up all of the years that Jerusalem was the capital of the Kingdom of Israel, including all of the time frames that are in the Bible, the entire book, it would add up to less than 200 years. That's true. Washington, D.C. has been the capital of a living nation longer than Jerusalem was the capital of ancient Israel. And that status of Jerusalem as a capital city of a nation, it ended well before Jesus Christ was even born.
As someone whose family died in the Warsaw Ghetto and in Polish concentration camps, I grew up with a very positive attitude towards Israel. That is to say, I understood the desire and perhaps need for a homeland as logical and essential. I only vaguely followed the specific Palestinian question. And the Israeli-Palestinian problem in Gaza was very much in the background. But fairly recently, I looked at material based on Abby Martin's courageous visit to the area, and I was shocked and incredibly disappointed at what I saw. I remember that Jimmy Carter had written a book about this quite a few years ago, and actually there's a movie made about it, and it just sort of disappeared. As a matter of fact, I recently tried to find the movie. I could not find a copy that I could look at. But he was saying a long time ago that there was an apartheid situation there in Israel in regards to the Palestinians. Anyways, after Abby Martin's looking at Abby Martin stuff, subsequent research made me aware of the enormous suffering of the Palestinians dispossessed by the formation of Israel and the terrorism initiated by the Israeli side while the British mandate was still in power. Now, both sides have been involved, or people in both sides have been involved in terrorism and some pretty awful things and murder of a lot of civilians. So we are focusing right now on the Israeli situation, but it's complex. It's still complex, but it's totally wrong. That's what I think would happen here in Gaza. But let's look at a few quotes from the leaders of Israel, which I brought up in a recent program on the subject. Avigdor Lieberman, Israel's defense minister, said in regards to Syria, "We hit nearly all the Iranian infrastructure in Syria. They need to remember the saying that if it rains on us, it'll storm on them. I hope we're finished with this episode and everyone understood." Okay, so it's a very strong eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. Like I like to say, maybe an eye for an eye, and or maybe an eye for seven eyes or eight eyes, and a tooth for maybe a whole mouthful of teeth. As Netanyahu said, the international community should prevent the establishment of the Iranian Quds force in Syria. We must unite to cut off the arms of this expanding evil there and everywhere. He said, "I repeat, whoever harms us, we will harm him many times over, and whoever prepares to harm us, we will act to harm him first. That's what we did and we will continue to do." That's the end of the quote. Well, we've got several things here. The idea of preemptive war, whoever prepares to harm us will act to harm him first. That idea is dangerous. Yes, if some horrendous act is known about clearly, perhaps it should be stopped. The problem is when actions are taken that are based on insufficient evidence and are not only truly transparent, so a government can act preemptively for its own, not truly transparent, so that a government could potentially preemptively act for its own selfish purposes. Oh yeah, that was preemptive. Well, where's the evidence? The two attacks on the U.S. on the last two alleged Assad government's use of chemical weapons were neither transparent nor truly evidential based, at least to the public. In fact, there are, as we have demonstrated, multiple claims that Assad was not involved in any kind of chemical attack, and that even certain elements of the alleged attacks were fabricated by terrorist factions. Shades of the Gulf of Tonkin, the incident where a fabricated attack on the U.S. warship Maddox became the basis for the bombing of North Vietnam. But the Gulf of Tonkin seems clearer now, whereas the motivation for the U.S. attacks on Assad is still engulfed in shadows, with bits and pieces of its potential reality only coming out from alternative media. Well, the other aspect of Israeli strategy is to strike back disproportionately, and also that has drawbacks when the retaliation is based on the death and destruction, often with terrible consequences for the innocent. So let's take a look at the what Gaza has been like, and N31.
Life in Gaza is a painful struggle to get by. An 11-year blockade by Israel and neighboring Egypt has cut off the Palestinian territory from much of the world and brought its economy to its knees. The siege was put in place in 2007 after Hamas took control of the Gaza Strip. To the US and Israel, the group is a terrorist organization. 2 million people are packed into this small strip of land, one-tenth the size of Rhode Island. Permission to leave is rare, and unemployment stands at 40%. For the young generation protesting, few have any prospects for a job or a future where they can afford to raise a family.
You cannot believe how is the complex and difficult life as we are now. All the streets are full of trashes or of garbage. All the people, they have no work, they have not employment.
We visited Ahmad from the protest in his home. He and his family have fallen on very tough times. Before the 2014 war, he drove a taxi, but his car and apartment were destroyed in the Israeli airstrikes. So they moved into this cinder block shack. It has no running water, and they cook on an open fire, unable to afford gas. He did casual work on building sites to pay the rent, but hasn't been able to work since he got shot. The family survive on handouts and the small vegetable patch in their backyard. Most Gazans cannot afford a generator during the lengthy power cuts here.
When people here run out of electricity, they only get 3 hours a day. They can either use a small battery to try to operate lights, or they just go outside and light fires.
This life has given Imad, like many Gazans, a sense of having little to lose.
Why do you go?
Although it is dangerous and they use ammunition and gas, if the Palestinian nation does not go to fight for its rights, then who will do it for us? We are walking into death, but we are not afraid. I have the right to do this. Even when the Israeli soldier shoots me, he is afraid of me. The soldier knows this is my right.
The man who's talking, I believe that he, you know, based on what I saw beyond this clip, he was shot twice in the legs, and he walks around in crutches, and he's still going back to the border during the protests. Well, as our last clip explained, the living conditions in Gaza are terrible. One could spend 3 hours or more discussing it. Very little electricity, shortages of food, and poor housing and polluted water. Abby Martin has done an excellent job of showing these conditions during her visit to Gaza. Her work demonstrates the brutality of the occupation. And as I say, this particular voyages by her and her her videos have kind of changed my life. And it's a microcosm of other things that are going on in the world, many, many things. And I want to see something changed. So anyway, although there are many unacceptable things to focus on in Gaza, let's just talk about one shocking reality. That currently 97% of the water in Gaza is polluted. One reason for this, cited by the head of the Palestinian Water Authority, Rebni Al-Shayek, is the increasing level of salt and nitrate in the water that can trigger kidney and urinary tract infections in children and pregnant women. Gaza residents almost entirely depend on groundwater, and this groundwater is currently being contaminated by the nitrates in sewage and farm fertilizer. Around 96% of the groundwater is unsafe for drinking without chemical treatment. I think it worthwhile to review how Gaza came to this point. Let's hear a brief clip from an interview by Aaron Mate of The Real News, to me one of the more responsible news sites I've come across. That is The Real News. In this clip, Aaron interviews author Norman Finkelstein, author of Gaza, An Inquest into Its Martyrdom. That's N32.
Norman, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So talk about what's at stake with the final stage of the Great March of Return.
Well, I think the most important thing is to put the march in its historic context. 70 years ago, this coming May 15th, began the expulsion of Palestinians from what became the State of Israel. And so the beginning of the process, which is culminating this week, was the creation of the Palestinian refugee question. And 70% of the population of Gaza constituted by refugees and their children, who are also classified as refugees under the UN system. So the beginning of the process is expulsion. And a half century ago, Gaza came under Israeli occupation. And it was, from the very beginning, a very brutal occupation. The worst massacres were presided over at the time by Ariel Sharon. So now you have expulsion. On top of that, you have occupation. And then, beginning in 2006, you have the siege of Gaza, the blockade, after Hamas won the parliamentary elections. Israel, followed by the U.S. and the EU, imposed a medieval-like siege, a blockade of Gaza, which is an illegal, immoral, inhuman siege of Gaza. And then you have the expulsion, the occupation, the blockade, and then on top of that, you have these periodic massacres visited on Gaza. since 2004, there have been not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, not seven, eight massacres visited on the people of Gaza. Now, when I say the people of Gaza, you have to bear in mind more than half the population are children. They're under the age of 18. So when we're talking about an inhuman blockade, when we're talking about massacres, they're being visited predominantly on children. Well, you can imagine, it's not difficult to conceive, that when you have this process of expulsion, occupation, blockade, massacre, at some point the place becomes unlivable. I don't mean unlivable in some sort of poetic sense. We're talking about physically. The UN consists mostly of bureaucrats, very dry bureaucrats. And they put out, on the other hand, they put out quite competent reports. And beginning in 2012, they were asking a very realistic question. Will Gaza be livable in 2020? Again, physically, biologically, medically, will it be livable? It began with a question. Then in 2015, a UN agency, UNCTAD, put out a report, and it no longer had it as a question. It said, on the present trajectory, Gaza will be unlivable in 2020. And then in 2017, the UN realized it had been overly sanguine, overly optimistic. They said that Gaza has crossed the threshold of unlivability a long time ago.
Well, I don't know. I'm going to ask you guys out there, if you're interested in talking about this, give us a call. This is a talk show. You've already heard from Annie Miller today. We'd like to hear from you. Our number is 888-429-5471. Please keep your questions connected to the theme of the show today, which is about the events in Gaza and the move of the embassy to Jerusalem. Number again is 888-429-5471. Well, I'll now give you a taste of a science fiction novel I wrote with Carlos Lopez Avery called The Thrice Born, followed by a look at the mission of New Galaxy Enterprises, our content development company.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We could take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God! Are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying, whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, the creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
My company, New Galaxy Enterprises, is a California corporation specializing in the creation of media and promotional content. We are focused on original, innovative projects that are good for humanity. These projects could be nonfiction books or novels, fictional screenplays or documentary content, websites and website content, commercial advertising content for print, audio, or video products on the internet, television, or radio, musical scores for advertising, television, or film, video, audio editing, etc. We want to promote products and projects that support the environment, encourage a healthy experience in living, developing, nurturing, and useful technology, and offering platforms for positive, socially constructive entertainment or informative, transformative media. Our experience in creating a variety of products like this is rather vast, and we offer client-based and collaborative products, as well as the opportunity of active investors to join us in the creation and promotion of proprietary products, some of which are in latter stages of development. For more information, go to www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. That's www.newgalaxyenterprises.com. If you're interested in talking to us, just fill out the contact sheet and we will get back with you. The 70th anniversary of the birth of Israel. This was supposed to be a gala event with the Trump Organization frequently downsizing concerns about the Palestinian reaction. Yet it turned out to be on the very day that the Israeli Defense Forces decided to rain death and destruction on Palestinians participating in the March of Return near the Gaza-Israeli border. Following that gruesome event, the next day a Security Council meeting was called. We're now going to quote from a CBS News report. Haley placed all blame, that's our distinguished ambassador to the UN, Nikki Haley. Haley placed all blame for the conditions of the conflict with Hamas after more than 50 Palestinians were killed by Israeli fire at the Gaza border following the U.S. embassy move to Jerusalem that was celebrated on Monday. And of course, there were hundreds of people wounded very terribly sometimes. Haley laid blame for Monday's violence of the Hamas extremists who rule Gaza and insisted it had nothing to do with the opening of the embassy, a move that infuriated Palestinians. She said at the UN, "I asked my colleagues here in the Security Council, who among us would accept this type of activity on your border? No one would," Haley said. "No country in this chamber would act with more restraint than Israel has. In fact, the records of several countries here suggest that would be much less restrained." Moving the U.S. Embassy to Jerusalem was the right thing to do, Haley added. "It reflects the will of the American people. It reflects our sovereign right to decide the location of our embassy. A right that everyone in this room claims for their own country. Immediately moving out of our embassy to Jerusalem also reflects the reality that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel. It has served as Israel's capital since the founding of the state. It is the ancient capital of the Jewish people. There's no plausible peace agreement under which Jerusalem would no longer remain the capital of Israel. Recognizing this reality makes peace more achievable, not less." Haley walked out of the meeting when the Palestinian envoy began speaking, a symbolic gesture. "The United States uses veto to block any investigation, as it did to block the investigation into a U.S. chemical attacks on Syria." Well, this is all very interesting. What I'd like to do now is play something that our ex-Secretary of State, Tillerson, actually said at a meeting of the university, it's the VMI commencement. It's extremely interesting because although I thought that it was kind of peculiar the way he was treated by Trump, he was always striving to actually do his job as a diplomat. And now I think he's free of that restraint that he was under all the time. He said this:
"A responsibility of every American citizen to each other is to preserve and protect our freedom by recognizing what truth is and is not, what a fact is and is not, and begin by holding ourselves accountable to truthfulness and demand our pursuit of America's future be fact-based, not based on wishful thinking, not hoped-for outcomes made in shallow promises, but with a clear-eyed view of the facts as they are and guided by the truth that will set us free to seek solutions to our most daunting challenges. It is also that foundational commitment to truth and facts that binds us to other like-minded democratic nations, that we Americans will always deal with them from the same set of truths and facts. And it is truth that says to our adversaries, we say what we mean, and we mean what we say. When we as people, a free people, go wobbly on the truth, even on what may seem the most trivial of matters, we go wobbly on America. If we do not, as Americans, confront the crisis of ethics and integrity in our society and among our leaders in both public and private sector, and regrettably at times even the nonprofit sector, then American democracy as we know it is entering its twilight years.
Well, I think perhaps listening to that wonderful expression, seek the truth and its truth will set you free, is what he had begun with, actually, before that clip. We know that what we're involved in terms of geopolitical situations, involves a lot of deception, a lot of very strange things. And this Gaza incident with the claim that Israel showed such great restraint and Hamas was responsible, there's a lot of questions there. We have Lynn on the phone. How are you doing, Lynn?
Hi, Johnny. Well, I'm really, you know, I want to bring up today how important it is for people to, you know, get the truth about what's going on. And so I called in to get people to go to the website, JewishVoiceForPeace.org. And I feel in my heart that it's a very, very critical website and group connections that will be help save the planet, actually, in a way that is bringing in a new paradigm of systems and structures and geopolitical and economic programs. And they are getting together, and please go to JewishVoiceForPeace.org. And there's six different, they're Jewish Voice for Peace. It's a national member-driven organization dedicated to a U.S. foreign policy based on peace, human rights, and respect for international law. And the power and the understanding of what was supposed to truly happen in the Middle East, of course, got obfuscated and moved and the warring, drugging, jailing paradigm of programs on the planet have to be shifted. And this is, it's time. So this JewishVoiceForPeace.org, there's a great group of different people. Palestinians are gathering with them. There's six things to know about what they're calling the hashtag Great Return March. Did you already talk about that earlier?
No, I didn't talk about the organization. I mean, it's true that, that Jewish people throughout the world, not all of them are on the side of Israel in this Gaza thing. And these people, I've looked at their site, and they're very disturbed about what's happening in Gaza. They don't agree with it at all.
I know. And there's two other ones, too, for people, because the more the churches and the, you know, the Jewish groups, there's two other huge Jewish groups. And it's Kat Zaviz, it's the spiritualprogressives.org, and then also, too, it's the Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N, with Rabbi Lerner, and they're all trying, you know, I feel like when you talk about the coalitions, how important it is to get these different peace coalitions that actually have the heart and soul and the best interest of human rights and bringing in, you know, a new systems change that is not spiritual, it's not loving, and it's definitely not Christian, Jewish, or Muslim, or Hindu, or Buddhist in nature at all. So, and these six different, on the Jewish Voice for Peace, I know we're running out of time, Jewish Voice for Peace website, they have different, please go there, JewishVoiceForPeace.org, because the hashtag Great Return March is very important. They have a senators to investigate Israeli violence is number one. Then they go in to tell Starbucks to drop the ADL. There's different people that, you know, that resonate at different levels of environmental issues or what have you, and they'll be drawn to help in their own way. No business in illegal settlements. That's another one of the six tenants. Legal stands that they're taking. Tell Mimi that you are with her. So women's groups like, you know, charter for compassion.org would, the women's charter for compassion.org group, you know, would get, be able to get involved at these different levels.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. There's certainly a lot to talk about, and certainly we want to invite these people to participate in the coalition, which will help bring many different groups together to work on talking to each other and getting initiatives sent out and getting the right people elected. So we're sort of hoping to create this kind of resource. I want to get back for a second. Thank you, Lynn. I want to get back to about Hamas here. And, you know, Hamas is being blamed for this whole thing. And the Israeli newspaper Haaretz reported on May 17th that Israel had attacked various Hamas posts in Gaza overnight after machine gun fire hit an Israeli house. According to this report, there was no human casualties, but some property damage. So there was more than just reprisals on the border. Is Hamas truly culpable for all this dead and wounded? Can you blame them? Well, Max Boot, a columnist for the Washington Post, says, of course. Hamas, the terrorist organization that controls Gaza, would not accept any U.S. embassy anywhere in Israel because it doesn't accept the state of Israel. Its charter says that Palestine is a land that was seized by racist, anti-human, and colonial Zionist project and vows the resistance shall continue until liberation is accomplished. So he says further, this man, Max, he says, amid this despair, Hamas has mobilized tens of thousands of Palestinians to march towards the border fence. And its aim is to pressure Israel and to, you know, to create this huge scene. And we're going to have to discuss this a little bit more another time. So we want to thank you for coming, and we will get back to this shortly. Thanks for joining Dr. Rodier and I on Inalienable and Free, Voice of the Coalition. As we go about developing our new organization, the Coalition for Planetary Empowerment, we hope you will consider the importance of taking part in the electoral processes of your government and asserting the rights you have to vote for the companies you respect and love by casting your ballot as a shareholder or as a consumer with what you buy. We hope soon to make this possible through a social network responsive to your needs to dialogue about your rights as a citizen, but also to be able to effectively act in concert with like-minded colleagues to find representatives of government and business executives will hear your voice and appreciate your message. See you soon.